The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. And now more than 100 nations are struggling with the problem of how to control atomic weapons. For years on this program, I have said that eventually you're going to live on into the time as one age seems to go flying past and another emerge. You're going to live on over into the time when more than 40 nations possess atomic and hydrogen weapons. Limited tactical nuclear weapons, as well as the bombs and the missiles to deliver them half a world away within 45 or 30 minutes. And now more and more, there might be the specter on the horizon of terrorist groups also getting in line to join the so-called nuclear club. India, one year after setting off its first atomic explosion it was careful to call not a bomb, is now planning new nuclear experiments that Prime Minister Indira Gandhi's government insists will only be for peaceful purposes. That was very interesting when India exploded that nuclear device and it said it definitely was not a bomb. I don't know what in the world it is that blows up if it's not a bomb. Most people say when it blows up, it's a bomb. And India blew up a huge section of real estate. You can see that ugly, almost like a fistule in the surface of the earth. You can't believe the ugly blemish that the hole left there where India, in one of the more uninhabited areas, tested their first nuclear explosion. They have now said it definitely was not their last test, and they have never said that it was. India, with that explosion, became the world's sixth nuclear power. That was on May 18th of 1974, when it detonated an underground blast equivalent to about 12,000 tons of TNT, which is comparatively small, a little more than half the strength of the first U.S. atomic bomb dropped over Hiroshima in 1945. And while they've tried to keep the timing of the next test secret, there is nevertheless positive indication that another testing of a weapon is underway. Energy Minister K.O. Pant told a parliamentary committee recently that Indian scientists will need to carry out more nuclear tests to continue their research into peaceful uses of atomic energy. But there's growing concern that the next nuclear test of India will have serious international repercussions that will probably cause another setback to any kind of normalization of relations between India and Pakistan, and might again increase the danger of more countries around the world, especially those close to India, but more countries in Southeast Asia, the Arab states, Israel, another subject that we'll comment on a little later, to go nuclear. The specter then of an era of plentiful nuclear weapons in which any local conflict might explode into a nuclear holocaust is becoming very real. As a matter of fact, Mr. Kissinger warned in almost exactly those words that such might occur in the near future. Now, we've heard about non-proliferation. We've heard about trying to halt the arms race and about detente. And it's almost as if we're living in a period of time where people believe the overkill has gone away. It's almost as if many of the bombs in Europe, and did you know that there are more than 100 separate cities inside Europe where American nuclear weapons are stored? It's almost as if all of those have been somehow dismantled and have been done away with and are no longer there as a haunting specter that might signal the end to all of human life on the face of the earth. But that non-proliferation treaty, while it might exist under a signature or two, and as a piece of paper in a file, and is supposed to be the only international instrument that bans the explosion of nuclear devices for even peaceful purposes by states that don't have nuclear weapons. But nevertheless, the transfer or the acquisition of nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices is supposed to be banned by that treaty. But of course, India never signed that treaty and publicly announced that it was against it, that it said it was discriminatory and unfair. It said that it reserved the right to conduct its own nuclear explosions for peaceful purposes, and of course India was never a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty. So now we can look at an entire new chapter in the entire thing, where more and more countries begin to develop nuclear capability for what they call peaceful purposes. And that's nothing more than a facade. The geopolitical overtones are clear. The warning to one's immediate neighbors are clear. the possible disequilibrium in the world at large is very, very clear. Today, six nations or more, and you can't really be sure, have the bomb. By about 1985, upwards of 20 countries could acquire their own atomic weapons. Among them, West Germany, Japan, some of the leading Arab states, Israel, Pakistan, and many others. Now, some of those countries are not only unstable, and especially when you look at some of the banana republics in Central and South America, but also there are hijackers that are harbored there, and various terrorist political organizations. As a matter of fact, many Americans, especially if they are in the employ of large oil companies or major concerns in our country or have high political stature, would be a little afraid to journey to Argentina these days. You can get yourself kidnapped and killed merely by being an American in many countries of the world. Well, it wasn't long ago that representatives of more than 100 nations were meeting in Geneva on how well the nuclear non-proliferation treaty is working out, or how poorly. But you know, the facts are that there are many, many countries who are going to find it increasingly expedient under the guise of the research of new and alternative energy sources to explode nuclear devices. You have the combined pressures of those who are screaming energy crisis and shortage of oil, of fossil fuel on the one hand, the pressure of ecologists on the other hand, but the pressures politically as well as militarily for one little country after another to get their hands on nuclear weapons as fast as they possibly can. But we live in a time now where even hijacking shipments of nuclear weapons looms as a possibility. We live in a day where building crude bombs with plutonium or highly enriched uranium, stolen or even purchased on a kind of an international uranium black market, turns out to be a far simpler chore than a lot of people may have imagined. We live at the possible time when even a nuclear submarine skipper could go berserk. Perhaps there could be a mutinous crew. I mean, when you stop to think in the years gone by of the near accidents of air-to-air collisions carrying nuclear bombs at the time of the loss of a nuclear device off the coast of Spain, when one of the most unbelievable epics of rescuing something from beneath the sea, you could hardly believe your eyes, when they actually went down and plucked it off the continental shelf off the coast of Spain. That was fantastic. But there was a huge nuclear device that had fallen out of the bomb bay of an aircraft. Now we know that there are terrorist groups that can actually take over countries given enough time. And we live in a time where with nuclear proliferation and with the stockpiling and storage of nuclear weapons around the world, with America's own nuclear arsenal spread all over the western states, all over our Air Force bases, aboard our aircraft carriers and in other vessels, in the bomb bays of our bombers and our SAC aircraft that are aloft all the time, and of course in about 100 separate cities over there in Europe, then the day when somehow some nuclear weapons may fall into the wrong hands comes closer and closer to reality. Now, it's become very apparent that many additional nations are headed toward joining the nuclear club. I personally feel that Israel may already possess a low-yield nuclear device of some kind and believe that the U.S. State Department may well have suspected that, which is why, even during the Nixon administration, that former President Nixon said he would guarantee any delivery, any shipment of conventional weapons to Israel in that Yom Kippur War. Probably a calculated risk. Knowing what the Arab reaction might be, I don't think anyone suspected it might be what it really was, which was finally a complete united Arab agreement to cut off oil and to clamp not only an embargo, but then skyrocketing quadrupling of oil prices, which has tumbled one major Western economy after another into a tailspin. But they took that risk probably because there was strong suspicion inside the State Department that the Israelis already possessed a nuclear weapon. Now, with the Soviets, possibly standing ready to supply the Arab states, principally Egypt or others, with nuclear weapons. And certainly that would occur if Israel ever announced that she had one. Now, she does have nuclear power plants, but then so does Japan, so does West Germany, and so do many other countries. But can you imagine what kind of a world it is going to be with Arabs and Israelis alike possessing nuclear weapons, with countries all over Southeast Asia possessing nuclear weapons, with Central and South American countries with the bomb? Let's talk about where we are right now in the world in this unbelievable nuclear race. We talk about non-proliferation, and yet what difference does that make when you have to realize that going clear back to the mid-60s and in 1970, there were assessments and appraisals, some of them at variance with others, but by fairly responsible institutes like the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute and many others, which talked about overkill, which gave estimates of exactly the total megatonnage that was on hand at that time, years ago, in terms of explosive capacity and what it would do to this world if it were unleashed. The Bible says just before the time of the end, there would be a time when, if that nuclear war were not stopped, no flesh would be saved alive. That's in Matthew 24 and verse 22. Jesus himself said, "Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved." Well, it was November 2, 1970, from Stockholm that it was reported nuclear stockpiles possessed by the United States and Russia alone, without adding some of the others who have since come along, and including the arsenals of Britain, of France, of Communist China, and now of India, that just the superpowers had sufficient explosive force to blast every person in the world with an equivalent of 15 tons of TNT. Now, that's a global military survey published and widely circulated back in 1970. By 1970, then, one authority said there existed for you and for me and for your child and for mine 15 tons for every man, woman, and child. Now, since that time, we have been building and developing, and the MIRVs and all of that have been built and developed by the Soviet Union. We've been building bigger booster rockets. They've been building and maintaining and trying to deploy MIRVs. Maybe there is a kind of an upper limit to the size of a bomb, I don't know. We'll talk about some of the reports on that in just a moment, what the capacity for destruction really is. But whether you have any variance beyond that 15 tons, whether it's 1 ton or whether it's only 2 pounds of TNT, it doesn't really seem to be anything but an argument in semantics, because it makes no difference. When you have enough explosive force to blast you to bits or to blow your head off, that's quite enough to take care of you. And when you've got more than 15 tons for every human being on the face of the earth, and I say any additional nuclear building or proliferation, and even maintaining what we've got, is a kind of a rare form of insanity that is very difficult to understand. A direct quote from the SIPRI yearbook of world armaments and disarmament from 69 and 70 said, "Estimates of total megatonnage are few and need to be interpreted with care. If the total stands at 50,000 megatons, a megaton is a million tons, which seems a reasonable guess, it would represent about 15 tons of TNT per person on the globe, and this is more meaningful, about 60 tons per person in the NATO and Warsaw Pact nations taken together." And, of course, such an overkill statistic is unimaginable. It bends your mind out of shape. You can't really get a handle on that. 60 tons per person of all the NATO and the Warsaw Pact nations. 15 tons per person around the world. F.H. Melman of York University talking about nuclear arms before the Canadian Political Science Association said that he felt combined U.S. and USSR nuclear stockpiles at 80,000 megatons, or he doubled the other reports. He said that would stack up to about 30 tons of TNT for every living human being. So the reports may vary from 15 tons to 30 tons. But if you're standing atop a ton of TNT and somebody lights the fuse, you're going to go straight up, or maybe straight out, or in all directions. And whether it's 15 tons per man, woman, and child all over the world, or whether it's 30 tons, doesn't make a bit of difference. But let's think in smaller terms, perhaps. We're all familiar with the American B-52s. We know that they're called an aging bomber now, but they have been the standard high-altitude, long-range bomber of the United States for a long, long time. One of those standard nuclear weapons aboard a U.S. Strategic Air Command B-52 bomber would be about a 20-megaton hydrogen bomb. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means it would have the explosive energy of 1,000 times the bomb that destroyed about 92,000 lives and wiped out the city of Hiroshima. That's right. A standard nuclear weapon in the bomb bay of a B-52 would be about 1,000 times the explosive capacity of the bomb that destroyed Hiroshima. Now, just one 20-megaton bomb, that's equivalent to 20 million tons of TNT, would be three times the explosive energy of all the bombs used during the 6 years of World War II. But one B-52 could carry several of these bombs. That's why, you see, nuclear arms have given rise to new types of phraseology among military minds. They've now had to talk about bombers that can carry one, two, or three World War IIs, because, you see, one B-52 could carry several of these bombs, and each one of them is equivalent in destructive force to all the explosive energy unleashed by all bombing by all participants on all continents during World War II. It was clear back in 1966 that Vice Admiral Robert J. Stroh of the Navy, he was America's number two man at that time in selecting the targets if nuclear war ever came, and he said every potential bullseye in the world lives constantly under a specifically earmarked bomb or missile. I have told audiences, live audiences, around and up and down the breadth of the country and the length of it, from Canada to Florida, and from up in the northeastern part of the country down into our Bay Area of California, that very same thing, that every moment of every hour there is nuclear stalemate. Soviet submarines prowl offshore of the United States, up and down the east and the west coast and in the Gulf. And as they change course and as they change depth and as they go on their assigned routes down there, those computers are continually calculating the yaw, the roll, the drift of the vessel, calculating its speed, and changing continually those warheads, so that in the missile silos aboard these missile submarines capable of launching those missiles with nuclear warheads of multi-megatonnage from beneath the surface of the ocean. So they just pop out of the sea and they're well on their way, no defense against them at all. And it's a standoff. But here are all these big cities of the Seattle-Tacoma area, of Portland, Oregon, of the Bay Area, of San Francisco and Oakland and Stockton, of Los Angeles and San Diego, and as far inland as Denver and Albuquerque. And from the other side, all of the major targets of Boston and of New York and Washington, D.C., and all of the big cities up and down the east of Philadelphia and Baltimore, and as far over as Chicago and beyond. And from the Gulf, and that was why, of course, Cuba was to be denied as a base to Soviet IRBMs, but that doesn't mean that their submarines are not harbored there, which they are, and that doesn't mean that their submarines don't prowl the Gulf, which they do, and that effectively covers all of the big southern cities of Atlanta and of the Dallas and the Fort Worth complex. So every major city in the United States is covered by perhaps not just one, but many Soviet multi-megaton nuclear warheads that are specifically aimed at that particular bullseye every instant of every night and every day. Now, at the same time, not only the Strategic Air Command bombers that are aloft, that fly out of some of the bases even now being denied the United States in places like Turkey and elsewhere in the world, but aboard aircraft carriers and other vessels of our nuclear-powered Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean, and even underneath sometimes the polar ice cap, but up off the top of the world there off of Murmansk and Vladivostok, our own submarines ring the Soviet Union. And of course in Europe, under NATO command, in the hands of other people, Germans, French, others, are hundreds and hundreds of American missiles and American nuclear weapons, and they are zeroed in on the bullseyes, the targets in the Soviet Union, all the way from their vast industrial heartland of their European part of the Soviet Union to some of their missile launching sites that are known. Now, if you assume that one of these submarines, a couple 300 miles off our coast, off New York there, and there are many of them all the time, has ground zero as downtown Manhattan, then a 50 megaton bomb would do the following. It would dig a crater that would be exactly 1 mile wide and 300 feet deep, and would instantly kill everybody, sheltered or unsheltered, whether in or out of buildings, within a distance of 3.5 miles. It would level all other buildings in a radius of 5.5 miles. Or that takes it clear on up past the, the bomb hit right at the tip of Manhattan, that would take it clear on up to the other end of Central Park. It would kill everybody above ground within a radius of 7 miles. That would take in all of Queens and the Bronx and all of Upper Manhattan. It would flatten every home made of brick, unless it were heavy reinforced concrete, within a 10-mile radius, and would destroy wood homes up to 16 miles away, but now you're getting clear out into suburban New Jersey. It would cause second-degree burns and ignite fires 35 miles away. And then, of course, comes the fallout, comes the resultant firestorm, comes the pollution of the surface water, comes all the disease and the horrible injury and the wounding of flying glass and everything else associated with it. But then, as that huge cloud would go up into the atmosphere and be carried eastward, it might cause fallout clear over in Paris, France, that would take additional thousands of lives later on. That's only one 50 megaton bomb. It would literally make all of New York City and its associated environs of Queens and Bronx and all the rest of it, and of Jersey City, uninhabitable, an absolute uninhabitable wasteland. Now, we think that all of this has gone away because we haven't heard much about it lately. From 1945 to 1970, the number of nuclear warheads in the U.S. strategic arsenal went from about zero at the time when they expended both of the only two they had at the end of the war to 4,000 by 1970. But by the middle of 1975, we will have increased that 4,000 nuclear bombs to 10,000, more than double, in 5 years. What will we have by 1980? Under this nuclear non-proliferation deal we've got going. Probably 20 or 25,000, I imagine. Now, about half of that increase was achieved by 1973. And so it's very likely that those 10,000 already exist. And it was made possible by a single development in military technology. That was the MIRV system we talked about so much, which means multiple independently targeted reentry vehicle. And of course, what we did in this pact with the Soviet Union is to halt American deployment of MIRVs and allow the Soviet Union to catch up. Isn't it a nightmarish, unbelievable age in which we live, where we are playing a kind of a bizarre, funny Russian roulette with the potential to annihilate all of humankind on the face of the earth, and allowing the Soviet Union to balance it out so that they meet us exactly at the middle, at the halfway point? We have the same big boosters they've got. They've got the same number of MIRVs we've got. Now, that 50 megaton bomb would be the size it could be carried in an average, a B-52 bomber, although it would have to carry three bombs. Most of ours are in a 20 megaton range, and 50 would be the average Russian size, perhaps, or even bigger. But what about a 1 megaton bomb if it were on a city of about 1 million? That's one way to look at it. A study has been made on that that showed a city of about 1 million population, which might extend in all directions from anywhere to, 5 to 6.5 miles, would be attacked as if it were a miniaturization, and then the exact casualties were computed. And that was all figured out. It was assumed that with a single 1 megaton nuclear weapon, it would be exploded at ground level, and it was using the experience of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and estimating it out on the basis of those effects. That in a city of 1 million, the blast and the fire would take 270,000 lives out, and then those who would be killed immediately and very shortly thereafter by radioactive fallout would be 90,000, making it the full one-third of the population in the initial explosion. 90,000 would be injured, of whom 15,000 would be in the area of fallout and exposed to the effects of radiation for a long time, and of course, most of them might eventually die. And there might be about 710,000 of whom 115,000 might have been in the area of fallout, but have been deep underground and in shelters, presumably, who might have escaped serious injury. But there is one inescapable and basic fact, and that is that the nuclear armories, which are already in being, do contain thousands of huge, multi-megatonnage weapons, each one of which has a destructive power greater than that of all the conventional explosives that have ever been used, listen to this, ever been used in all of man's wars since the invention of gunpowder. And yet we continue to build them every single day. And more nations are standing in the wings, waiting in line, as it were, to build nuclear weapons. And now India gets ready to explode more nuclear devices, and of course has never signed the non-proliferation treaty. And so 100 countries around the world are right now grappling with the unbelievable headache of how to control uncontrollable atomic weapons. This is the age in which we live. And I happen to believe it is absolutely prophetic when Jesus Christ of Nazareth said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Now it's bad enough to live in a time when tiny conventional type wars can bring the superpowers like two bristling mastiffs nose to nose making threats and counter threats. But what about the time when these small countries themselves possess nuclear weapons? And we're living in that time already. And it's growing every single day and every single year. It's time you got the overview and wondered, what is the outcome going to be? The good news that is on beyond that gloomy prophecy in Matthew 24 is, for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. The Bible talks about an interference in human affairs. It talks about the shortening of time. It talks about divine intervention of saving man from himself, because man is unable, absolutely unable, to govern himself successfully and to find the way to world peace. Well, it's time your memory was refreshed a little bit about the way of the world, the time in which you yourself live. You need to write for the Overview publication called The Plain Truth. All you need to do is to address your letter, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.